Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're listening to Mortgage Lending Mastery. Get the knowledge you need to advance your mortgage practice quickly and efficiently from Jen Duplessis, America's Mortgage Mastery Mentor with over 37 years of experience and over $1 billion in lifetime fundings. Jen has been mentoring loan officers and realtors for over 15 years and speaking on stages across the globe. So settle in and get ready as Jen and her guests share their experience, passion, and strategies to help you crack the top producer code to reach new heights in your business. And now, here's your host, Jen Duplessis, Mortgage Mastery Mentor and head chick in charge of Kinetic Spark Consulting.
Hey there, and welcome back to Mortgage Lending Mastery. Okay, so our guest today is Dorian Lamb, and he is known as the true defender of the deal, which I absolutely love. I cannot wait till we're talking about it. He is the principal and executive vice president of Cornerstone Land Abstract, a boutique title insurance company in the heart of New York City. And I just found out he's actually in Times Square, and that is totally the heart of New York City. No question about it. And he's the creator of the Cornerstone Report, which I'm going to ask you just a little bit about, the ultimate, which is the ultimate title risk assessment resource, which identifies potential property risks that could lead to prevention or costly delay of closings. That I just want to chat with you about that. He is the founder of Real Estate Warriors, a networking coalition for individuals who believe in mindfulness and sweat equity. And he's also an active real estate investor. And by the way, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about some of your bio here, but welcome to the show. We're happy to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Jen, for that great intro. And I'm looking forward to being part of this.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just dig in. I mean, you are a, you know, as you say, I don't know if I agree with this totally, a boutique title insurance company in New York City who has been involved with over $10 billion worth of deals. And I'm thinking, how is that boutique? But I know that you do both residential and commercial. So tell us a little bit about the actual practice, how long you've been in practice, and what is that percentage of what you do? Because that will kind of guide where we want to go with some of these questions.
Yeah. So Cornerstone Land Abstract just celebrated its 15th year last month. We celebrated that with a rebrand of the company itself. So if anybody wants to go to our website now, they can see what the rebrand looks like. We handle both residential and commercial real estate transactions. So what that means is, you know, we're on the other side of a closing table when it comes to, you know, a refinance of, you know, $500,000 to an office acquisition, although the office asset class is going through what it's going through now in general, but we can close commercial assets to in excess of $100 million. So you have a wide spectrum there. But, you know, I noticed you said, how does a boutique company do $10 million in transaction? You know, look, when you're in New York and you're at this for 15 years, and we are at 16,000 closings, you can imagine how those numbers accumulate quickly. But we truly are boutique from the perspective of just even our size. We have a staff of 25, five of which are attorneys, and we really can handle any situation that comes to us because we have five attorneys. And also, you know, going through as many transactions as we've had, there aren't many varieties that differ much from, you know, what you see generally every day. So we consider ourselves boutique because we can really problem solve. And that to us is the most important thing a title company can bring, which is solving problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, of course, you're not a part of a chain. I mean, obviously you have your underwriting, you know, whoever your underwriting is through, but you're not part of that particular chain of, so yeah, I love that you said that. So I want to ask you then, you know, as a business owner, because the people that are listening to this obviously are mortgage loan officers, real estate investors, real estate agents, owners of other companies that may have the duality of, hey, we do residential, we do commercial. Being in both of those markets myself, the language is different, the needs are different, the process is different. One is very automated, the other is not so automated yet, right? It's getting there. So tell us a little bit about what the challenges have been in marketing what you do, and maybe just how you market. Maybe you have a different, you know, division of your company.
Yeah, so it's a timely question because I did mention we are going through and have launched the rebrand. So admittedly, our first 14 years plus were very typical of the real estate industry, which is look at these big buildings we're closing, or look at these beautiful houses, or look at how many of these beautiful houses we're closing. And a lot of the imagery was really, now in hindsight, I can say cold from the perspective of just buildings. It's your typical drone footage flying over a city, all great, cool stuff, all that work. So I'm not discounting that in any way. The reason why I mentioned that is because, and it does affect how we market, and it does speak to how we're marketing, that we are at a time and place in our evolution as a company and as business owners where real estate to this day is still a human, people-driven process. How many times have we heard that the key, one of the keys to success in real estate is that it's based on relationships and you have to build real relationships with people. So we are leaning into that from the perspective that if you go to the website now, you see a lot of happy people because when, you know, Jen, you've been through this, when you're at a real estate closing, it's very nerve-wracking. But this sense of accomplishment and the sense of, you know, we did it in the case of a home purchase or a commercial building purchase, but even more so on a residential purchase, you have people putting pretty much their life savings towards their dream purchase. And it leads to happy moments in people's lives. So we're leading into that. And the imagery is based off of us as a title company being there as an advisor, being there in a consultative fashion, there at the closing, talking you through the problems. And not just as a service provider that says, here's a piece of paper that you're getting at the end of the closing to add to your pile of paperwork that you may never look at again because you're too busy actually moving into the house or living into the house or getting used to your neighborhood. So it's very people-centric, which is the type of firm that we are. Because even at the level of who we work with, attorneys, developers, owners, operators, all of those are individual relationships as well. Mm-hmm. So we realize that it doesn't just stay within that circle. It can extend to the everyday consumer, which is why we've launched a direct-to-consumer approach and campaign where we're letting the mainstream consumer know that we are their advisor through the process and not just the service provider. I don't know if that answers quite your question with regards to the marketing of it.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I mean, it's, you know, it's a global approach. You know, the umbrella is, you know, it's client centric, no matter who the client is. So it doesn't matter what kind of deal they're bringing to you. Yeah, yeah, you're taking care of them from a human perspective and making sure that they feel, you know, that the client experience is unique and different from anything that they've ever experienced before. And I think that's very important. You know, closing for me is the moment of sale. I mean, everyone thinks, you know, I got a lead, I got yes, then, you know, it's not closed, but the contract was ratified and oh, the loan's approved. And now, you know, well, I won't show up at the closing. And that's just amazing to me because that's the point of sale. And I think that's the first impression.
Agreed.
Yeah.
There's a long way to go, even just from the point of contract, right? Mm-hmm. That's the truth is the beginning of the closing process, which in itself is its own process.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. That's interesting that you just said that. I don't know why it clicked with me right now is going under contract is the beginning of the closing process. Is so many of us don't think of that. We think it's a process and then we close, but it's actually the beginning of the closing process. And I think if we had a mindset shift on that, we would probably approach all this quite differently. So I love that you said that. I want to talk to you about this, the Cornerstone Report, you know, the ultimate risk assessment resource, which identifies potential property risks that could lead to prevention. So, of course, I'm thinking of this going, well, wait a minute, you're doing a title search. You're already doing a title search. Isn't that taking care of the risk assessment, you know, and identifying potential property issues, identifying delays in closing? So what makes this unique and different over just a regular title commitment?
Yeah, and you're right. A title search will reveal all that. Mm-hmm. But the Cornerstone Report was really born not so much from identifying that lien, that encumbrance, that factor that may alter how you either underwrite a deal from the commercial perspective or think about a deal from the residential perspective. It really speaks more to the timing of it. So oftentimes, especially here in New York, you don't actually run a title report until a contract is signed.
Right.
And the prevailing thinking behind that is, why run a title report if I'm not in a deal? It can be wasted money, or it can be money I don't need to spend. We at Cornerstone believe in value add. So whether it's a commercial or residential client, we suggest that they run the report earlier. So I'll give you the two examples that led to this being really born. Aside from actually being at the closing table and actually hearing deals fall apart from things that are revealed from a title report, our internal staff would scratch our heads and say, how on a commercial deal are some of these things just being discovered yeah. sometimes months into the process, yeah. right? Yeah. I mean, especially after a contract is signed. So we realized after a couple of instances of this happening and then having conversations with those who are in closings regularly from the developer perspective that this does come up. So we mm-hmm. offered to run these reports earlier. Now it's not a full title report. It's what we call a pre-title report, mm-hmm. which is a first pass at the major components that we have seen identified or that we have identified and seen that can impact your thought process. So famously, we had a $10 million building here that had $1 million water bill, right? That's 10% of the sales price. And, you know, $1 million water bill is nothing to blink at in general, even with New York real estate. And the fact that this is being discovered after you signed the contract, after you did your due diligence, after you did mm-hmm. whatever it was yeah. in your underwriting, where you, you know, kind of made this deal made sense, that was alarming to us. So we decided we have the data, we do have a core competency, or we did have a core value of, you know, being technology data driven. So what that meant is we acquired all the data here in New York, and we can essentially put together our own reports as needed. So this is one of the reports we created.
Yeah.
Now, on the residential side too, I promise I'd give you two examples. You can identify whether or not there are shared easements that you're unaware of. Mm-hmm. There are shared driveways where who does own the driveway? Is it mine? Can I just take it? I don't really want to share it anymore. These are the type of things that we can offer up front when you're looking at the property, as opposed to you discovering that when you've gone through all the bank approvals, you know, lining up your loan, getting the attorneys involved, signing a contract, and then poof comes a title report that says, hey, you know, the shed is really outside the boundary of your survey. It's not really included. Or the description as detailed in deeds throughout history is that there's actually 13 feet of, you know, footage that you're not going to really own because it's not described in your deed. So you got to figure those things out. Again, sometimes people will walk away from a deal after spending all that time. And, you know, one of our old taglines was, what good is a deal if it doesn't close? So we're doing our part as a title company to contribute earlier on. So it yeah. really is more about the timing of it more than the fact that it would be revealed at some point in time.
Yeah. Yeah. So from your perspective, I'm trying to, you know, think how this actually semantically works. I know I'm going to share something similar that I've seen a real estate agent do, not related to title, but something similar. But I just want to see how the semantics work on this. So, or the logistics on this. So then your team, your salespeople are going out to listings and saying, hey, let us run this. And because we're doing, and this really doesn't sound like a preliminary title report in the context of what we all know is a prelim, but it's even a pre-prelim report. And so your team is going out and saying, hey, you know, you just had this listing, whether it's commercial or residential, we would love to run this preliminary report so that you don't run into any problems, you know, from your seller perspective moving forward. Because as a buyer,
right?
Am I correct on that? Okay. Because I was saying as a buyer, it's kind of hard to say, oh, you know, unless the realtor has a relationship with you that says, hey, you know, I want you to use my title company. So before we make an offer on this, let me just have them run this real quick and see if this is something. But I, you know, I can imagine that there's a big cost, a front loaded cost perspective in this for you all, because if they don't use you, that's a problem, you know, obviously. But I think it's a necessary evil in trying to get business, you know, ahead of time and prevent some of the problems, correct?
Yeah. So, you know, on the front of approaching the listing, yes. So whether it's a realtor or an investment sales broker for commercial, yeah. We are approaching them and saying, you should run this because it only makes you look smarter or more prepared, right? Than anyone else who's not telling you something you don't know about your property. So if you can show up to your client and say, hey, by the way, you know, you have two mechanics liens, maybe a list pendants. Are you even aware of this, right? Because it's going to impede the speed at which you'd be able to sell your property. You have to address it at some point or another anyway. Or think about if you were to walk into a developer's office and say, great, you're looking at this land, but, you know, there's a restriction on a deed that says you can only really build community facility or religious facility, you're developing a condo, that's going to be an issue, right? So it makes you more prepared. This method, though, is not ubiquitous enough where it's just one side, or that because it's always done, that it's readily available. So we can do it for the buyer side as well. We do have buyer side reps say, hey, let's just do a first pass at this. Let's just see what comes up from the perspective of violations.
Yeah.
Maybe the previous owner just poorly managed their property, that there's a bunch of violations that you'd be taking on or that need to be solved before you can close. So it can happen on both the seller and buyer's side.
Yeah.
With regards to your question on, yes, there is an upfront cost for us. So there is some level of risk that we're taking because we are not guaranteed their transaction. But here's how we look at it. So I did mention we accumulated and purchased all the data.
Right.
So we do and are able to create these reports at a much lower cost than anybody else would. Right. But at the end of the day, the real reason, though, is, you know, I told you a little bit about the makeup of our staff, where we have 5 attorneys. Us running these reports, whether or not we win the deal or not, makes us smarter with regards to the type of impediments that can appear in the way of a closing. So even if we don't get and win the transaction, it's just another reference point for our team to go through and say, hey, look what just came up in this report. How would we solve this?
So it
makes us better at what we do. It's kind of our version of a rep. We often hear when you're at a gym or when you're forming new habits, it's about the reps that
repetition.
Are
repetition.
Rep. So this is our version of a rep, whether or not we win the deal.
Yeah. And if it were ever to come up, you'd be able to solve it faster than any other company, you know, because you've already got, you know, knowledge of it or, you know, an SOP for it, right? A standard operating procedure for something that came up. Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I've seen so often is tax liens, federal tax liens that the sellers have. That seems to be a big issue,
yes.
You know, at least in Virginia it was when I, you know, was originating. Wow. Just federal tax liens that come up. And I mean, astronomical amounts and, you know, can't close the deal. And it's amazing. And I hate to say it, but a lot of them are with congressmen and senators because we did most of their financing. And so we had a lot of their sales too. It's amazing. Yeah. Not to go in that direction, but pretty
spot
amazing.
On, that's by the way. That,
yeah.
Spot on. Not to cut you off. That hasn't changed the yeah. federal tax lien. That,
isn't that crazy?
You'd be surprised on who actually has a federal tax lien.
Yeah. Yeah, because we can't get away with it, right? We can't get away with it. Yeah, I love that. So I wanted to share with you and share with our listener here, you know, that, you know, this, I saw a real estate agent do this with home inspections is why do we wait for the property go under contract and then get a home inspector rather than having a home inspection done in advance so that the seller could work on all the little things, you know, that need to be done. And then we moved that, and it was a suggestion I had once. And then we moved that into an annual inspection so that your house was always primed, just like you do your teeth and your car and your HVAC, do an annual home right. inspection or a semi-annual home inspection to ensure that things aren't falling apart. So that when the time comes, you don't have to incur the cost all at one time. So that helps the annual inspector, you know, the home inspector gets some annual income, which I thought was really cool. So I love those preventative measures. You know, I think any of our processes are fire prevention processes. That's really what they are. We're trying to prevent fires and everything that we're doing. So I absolutely love that. Okay. So I want to ask you a couple of questions. You know, what do you think title companies could be doing better to support loan officers and real estate agents other than open houses, sponsoring an event, right? Doing the same old things. What are some yeah. things that they could be doing a better job to have a you know, a stronger quality of relationship? So it's not based on fees that it so often is driven by.
Yeah, you know, look, I feel where our industry does not do a good job of is explaining to the real estate professionals that are also involved in a real estate transaction, how to best use title insurance as an asset and not as a reactionary component of it being required by the lender or it being required to be, you know, to close a transaction. It's one thing to be in the party, i.e. sponsoring events or, you know, sponsoring right. Collaborative type of scenarios where we both network together. But you have to get in the weeds as well, right? Like explain to the mortgage originator or loan originator the role that title insurance can play in their actual, practically in their own world. I mean, why would you want to spend time on something that, you know, potentially could take months to close because there's so much involved in it that in order to get to a path of closing, you know, you're talking, let's say, 6-8 months, whereas, you know, it's good to know that up front rather than later. As a realtor, you want to know, and it gives you an idea of how responsible the owner is. Are they real about selling their property, right? Or am I going to get involved with a scenario in which, you know, the seller wants to dip their toe in the water just to feel the market out, right? It gives you a sense of, if you're really serious, then, you know, as you mentioned, Jen, do the home inspection now, run the title report now. There are expenses, yes, you know, but at the same time, it means that you have skin in the game with regards to whether or not you want to move forward, how motivated the individual is. I feel like that's a challenge, both from a loan originator and a realtor standpoint, where one of the biggest questions that we all have to ask is, how motivated is this client? How are they really looking to close something here, or are they just feeling a scenario out?
Yeah.
So yeah, what can we do a better job of is explaining how title plays, number one, in the actual real estate transaction, and talk about the pitfalls, why it can hold up a closing. But more importantly, how can you use it? Have a title rep on your side that can at least fill in that piece of your knowledge gap with regards to, hey, look, if this is either crystal clear, you have nothing to worry about, which puts you at ease, or there's a bunch of things here that you need to get through before, you know, you can reasonably identify a clear path to close.
Yeah. And I've used that with my title, you know, representatives in the past is, you know, because I don't have a title insurance license. And I think loan officers have to understand that is that it's not for us to sell against or for what type of title insurance someone uses, who the title company is they use. We can recommend based on our experiences with the knowledge base and how the service looks like, you know, the client experience, how they've solved problems post-closing, how they interact post-closing, because those are things that I look for. But we are not licensed to, I say we, I'm not even in the business anymore, but we are not licensed to sell title insurance. So we can't step over that line. It's just, it's the same as, you know, telling a real estate agent, a loan officer telling a real estate agent, do not step over the line and start selling mortgages. That's, I'm licensed to do that. You're not. So it's the same type of thing, you know, I think where we can lean on. And so I always say, look, there's owner's policy and there's, you know, a non-owner's policy. And if you don't want to get the owner's policy, I just encourage you to have a conversation with my title representative and let them talk to you about what the pitfalls are rather than us walking into that. But yeah, so I thank you for that. And I think it just has to be more of a, the title rep needs to represent themselves in a manner that's more at a higher level, a higher emotional intelligence, rather than here are some cookies, bring business to us. Here's some things, bring business. Here's a flyer, bring things to us. I think that it's just falling short, you know, in that arena. And I see that on the commercial side as well, because, you know, I do a lot of commercial business as well. So I tend to see it, not as much, but same thing, you know. Okay, so let me ask you this. What are you seeing in today, you know, in today's market that homeowners investors should be aware of? Is there anything that's sort of coming up to, I don't want to say cream of the crop, like bubbling up? Is there something that's bubbling up that's happened as a result of the pandemic? You know, we had a lot of forbearance. We've had a lot of people that aren't making their payments, but they're making the payments on their $1,000 a month car. Right. What is it that's sort of bubbling up now? What's the popular number one, number two thing that we need to be aware of currently?
That's an interesting question because there's so many different directions I can go with that. But I'll go with top of mind, right? As you know, there are certain times where I feel like this impending recession, or I would argue we're actually in it already, but that we're in this period of time where things are supposed to be really bad. There are certain areas though that are not, and I'm guess you know, I guess you could say this geographically across the country or across North America in terms of areas that are resistant.
Thriving.
And, you know, as an investor, when you asked the question, you said as an investor, there are still pockets of places in New York that are outperforming what the general consensus is about real estate and its state nationally. And what I mean by that is, you know, there was a stat that was published last week that I think for the first time in over a decade that real estate values have, or home values have dropped by 11%. But the fact that it's dropped has been over, you know, a few years and definitely close to a decade. But there are pockets. So study your pockets, right?
Yeah.
And this particular pocket is, and it seems to be the trend here, especially in New York and its suburbs, where if you're honing on good school districts, because people will always pay for good school districts. And, you know, I'll give a case in point where I saw a report of an area here in Long Island in New York, where for the first quarter, the average days on market was 10 days. And every single one of those transactions went above ask.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring this up is because I was reading the report. I'm thinking, I just read all this very negative news about real estate. Here I am looking at a report where stuff's not even on the market for 10 days and it's all selling for above ask. And just so you know, it's over 20 transactions, right? So it's not like it was three or four.
Yeah.
So there's still an element of if you know the real estate, well, not if you know the real estate, if you hone in on certain areas, there's still value to be had. And these are, you know, generally resistant to downturns.
Yeah.
But you also asked the question in terms of what's bubbling. And when you frame it in that way, I think of it as like, what's bubbling that's about to burst, right? In a bad way.
Yeah.
And there is this, you know, and again, it could just be a dichotomy of what's happening across the, you know, this continent, but there is a huge need for affordable housing. Yeah. And the demand for it just continues to increase. And the supply for it has not kept up pace in general, and certainly not now, because there is a lot of external factors, political in some cases, political and not, that are holding investors' ability to actually create affordable housing, to create more affordable housing, to convert to affordable housing. So something's got to give. I don't know, again, if I'm answering your question in terms of what you were looking to get out of it, but what I can say is that there's going to be a real problem in affordable housing. And where there's generally a problem, there lies normally opportunity. So obviously, I don't have the answer to it, because otherwise I'd be on the path to being at least a local billionaire. But if there's anything to be, I guess, alert on, it's this problem of growing need for affordable housing and the lack of supply being built for it.
Yeah. And, you know, you and I were talking in the green room about this too, is that the government is not, you know, there's so many barriers to the investor. You know, I'll give you a couple examples. You know, there's a lot of investors buying land in Texas and developing an entire neighborhood of homes that they then can rent. I'm not saying they're affordable homes. I'm not saying they aren't, but they're building their own neighborhood, which is another issue potentially down the road, right? Creating their own market, but they're building neighborhoods where they're renting out homes because they can't find places to invest in. And there's like, well, if we can't beat them, you know, instead of joining them, we're going to create our own market over here. And so they're doing that there. We heard on the news in California that the homelessness, because the lack of affordability, homelessness, they're trying to put them in hotels. And I'm saying, well, why wouldn't you convert all of these empty commercial buildings now that everybody's hybrid working in the world? Why wouldn't you convert all these commercial buildings into condominiums, you know, into some type of condominium? And like you said, the barrier to entry is so difficult right now that everything just sits there. And that's not good, because then if you have to tear it down, that costs money to rebuild it, right?
Right.
It's a very chaotic circle right now that I see that's happening as well. And affordable housing, when we talk about that, it's not necessarily the ADU programs, right? That affordable dwelling unit programs, as much as it is just the everyday, you know, family that just can't afford to live in a place, you know, can't afford to have that American dream. And so it's kind of interesting that you're saying that. So this brings me to this maybe one of the final questions, maybe not, is your Real Estate Warriors Network. You said a networking coalition for individuals who believe in mindfulness and sweat equity. So tell me a little bit about this, because it sounds a lot like something I'm doing as an investor, but I'm curious to see what you're doing. I love the charitable aspect of this.
Yeah, it is a community that was born in 2018. And really what it was all about was, you know, real estate is very old-fashioned in the sense that a lot of the meetings and networking take place around, you know, drinks or, you know, late night dinners or just unhealthy, at least settings from, you know, my experience with it. And after doing it for a decade, it was one of those things where I felt like I was neglecting my personal health, you know, because of FOMO, right? Fear of missing out, of missing the next person or meeting the next person, or perhaps the next deal.
Yeah.
And I know it's something you focus on as well with regards to work-life balance. Mm-hmm. So in this case, the personal side of me was being neglected. So after, you know, some venting of sorts with others, we just kind of threw out very randomly, why don't we just do, you know, something healthy and network at the same time? So when we were brainstorming in that, and when I say we, I mean just other real estate professionals that felt the same way, you know, one night of drinks is fun, but you know, you do five nights of it, you're obviously not in a place where you need to be. So we said, you know, why don't we do a workout and see how that goes? And, you know, we would invite other real estate professionals to come and network and say, we'll get a workout in, and then we'll stay back, maybe, you know, do something again, healthy, have a light meal, have a smoothie, have a snack, whatever it is. And, you know, the first event, we, I believe, had 6 or 7 people there. And that year we had done it, we committed to doing it once a month. And, you know, we ended that year with a cycling class that had, you know, almost 40 people.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
These are all real estate developers, investors, owner operators, you know, types who actually, what I had realized in hearing stories of those who actually came, because everybody was like, this is such a great idea, that they were thinking of that as well. And they wanted a different environment, you know, to connect. And this is before any of the science geeks kind of, or nerds, you know, started explaining to me that it was genius because you have serotonin running through your body after a workout, which means that you're connecting at a level that is different than that of, you know, being intoxicated or, you know, with alcohol, that you're more likely to remember interaction when you have serotonin running through your body, because it's the hormone of connecting of sorts. I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to purport to know the exact science behind
right,
it. But you know, unfortunately, COVID came. And at that point, we shifted to a virtual program of mental health.
Yeah.
So we had a breathwork teacher. We had a meditating teacher just explaining to everybody how to kind of regulate themselves at times where you felt anxiety with having your whole family on top of you or just feeling like the world is ending. So now that we're back to sorts with regards to people feeling comfortable coming out, we relaunched the physical Real Estate Warrior last August, and people are coming out again to participate in our workouts together.
That's
and
awesome.
The sweat equity part of it is that this actually came out, the taglines that have come out of this have been, you know, great. And one of them was, you know, if we sweat together, we make money together.
Yeah.
It's one of my passions. Health and fitness and wellness is directly intertwined to my everyday process. So it's something I look forward to, and you know, it's something that has been fun, right? It's been fun. Real estate needs to be fun, not this daunting task of
I know
of doing something, yeah, that you're very nervous about.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I love the idea. I love that. And, you know, and especially with everybody now, you know, with business being down, is, you know, what else can I be doing? Well, this is what you could be doing. You know, I've been telling my students, you know, get ready for when happens. And we're on the brink of perhaps the when happening right now, with the rates dropping back down again, and, you know, on the residential side. And, you know, we're right on the brink of that. And we, you know, are you ready for when happens? And part of this is, you know, doing these activities that create relationships. You mentioned relationships earlier, and this is how you create relationships aside from, hey, do you want to have coffee? Hey, do you want to have a cocktail? It's another way to be able to do that. And I, you know, I think that's absolutely great. My husband and I are in a boat club, right? We have our own boat, but we also belong to a boat club where we rent boats. It's like an Airbnb for boats, except you don't spend the night. And it's up and down, you know, it's all over the world, but we use it up and down, you know, the East Coast and in San Diego and down in Florida and all that good stuff. And for us, that's the way that we can do that, you know, is bring people on a boat when I'm at an event and say, hey, you know, I happen to have rented a boat and, you know, you're so kind to talk to me and you did this and you said, thank you for something. And why don't you all come on a boat with us and, you know, let us treat you to a little cruise in the harbor, and we get to market, you know, to one another, and not market, but network together, you know, in those kind of ways. So I love that you're thinking, well, as a colleague of mine just said, David Austin, forget thinking out of the box, just blow the box up. And I love that you've done that.
Yeah. I mean, it really is an opportunity to get to know each other, right? At a level that most people don't. And
yeah,
you know, great. Real Estate Warriors is just an example. You know, you have another with boats and that experience.
Yeah.
You know, in real estate, especially the retail asset class, it's going through a forced kind of revisioning of how, you know, to go about executing retail type concepts. And we hear a lot about the word experiential.
Yeah.
The same applies to how we connect with people, right?
Yeah.
You want it to be experiential because it will make a bigger impact. And you know, be forged in a memory a little bit different than, you know, what's commonly done already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally agree. I love that. Experiential relationships. That's really what it is. It's not just business relationships. Yeah. It's experiential relationships. I think we just coined a new phrase. I think that's awesome. Except someone probably already did.
I like that.
We'll see. We'll see. Well, it's
experiential
been
experiential relationships. I like that.
Totally good. Yeah. So it's been a pleasure getting to know you and having this conversation. I do hope that we get to connect when I come up into New York. So I'll make sure that I text you when we're finished here so that we're connected and see your operations. That would be so great to see. And I just want to ask you, what would you like to leave for everybody? Some thoughts or, you know, simple thoughts, quotes, you know, something that you'd like to leave with everyone.
Yeah. What I would leave is something that is a part of my, is one of my North Stars. You know, where real estate is not so much even about the deal anymore, where it's about the people, whether or not you're getting into an investor relationship with somebody, or whether you are looking to partner or get involved with real estate in general. We mentioned earlier on that it's a people-driven business. So you really have to spend time in connecting with the people. I think the saying is, if I had to grab one here, is that it's better to take a good deal with great people than a great deal with bad people. And there's a lot of truth behind that. So that's what I would leave the audience with.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And you're so right. You are so right. And it's funny because I use this saying of don't work with people that complicate, only work with people that complement. And that's exactly what you're saying too is no, we don't work with people like that. Yeah. I love it. Thank you so much, Dorian, for being with us. Congratulations on your company and the success that you have. And, you know, blowing up the box. I was going to say thinking beyond, but you just have to say blow up that box. It's really great to see, you know, that someone, this A company is doing that here in the US, not to say that there aren't others, but I found you. So that's what I love about being able to have this conversation with you. So thank you so much and best wishes for success in the years to come.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you again for having me. I'm honored to be part of your ecosystem and world. And I do look forward to connecting with you when you're here.
Yeah, sounds good. And listen, you're listening in. So I want to remind you that we are having Make Your Mark Mastermind June 20th through the 23rd in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So make sure you check out the link below to get details about coming to our Make Your Mark Mastermind, where we are going to be masterminding to help you grow your business and scale it quickly, answer all of your questions, and be surrounded with like-minded individuals who want to do the same. So thank you again for taking time to listen into this podcast today. And we'll catch you next time on Mortgage Lending Mastery.
Thanks for listening to Mortgage Lending Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to hear more sales tips, ideas, strategies, and tactics to help you with your personal and professional growth to multiply your results in record time. And if you like what we're doing, don't forget to give us a rating and review so we can continue to bring you the best content possible. Wanting more beyond the podcast? Join our Mortgage Lending Mastery membership community, where you will find extended interviews with our favorite guests, weekly training, tips, and insider secrets, fireside chats with Jen, free content, meet, share, and collaborate with other members, and so much more. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about this exclusive content. Mortgage Lending Mastery is an Industry Syndicate charter podcast. Industry Syndicate is the first podcast network specifically for the mortgage and real estate industries. Get the Industry Syndicate app in the App Store or Google Play today.